This is FNX.
Listen to Shoot the Defense. It's unbelievable, Jeff.
Hello and welcome to Shoot the Defense on FNX, brought to you by PitchDMM, the app that lets fans rate their own team's performance. I'm your host, Stel, and my co-hosts tonight are Rodri Giggs, Yannikis Janu, and national radio producer and TalkSport presenter, Scott Taylor. Scott, welcome to the show, mate. How you doing?
Very well, thank you, Stel. How are things?
All good, mate. All good. Thank you for coming on the show. Really appreciate it.
Absolutely no problem. Anytime.
Thank you very much. Rod, how you doing, mate?
Yeah, I'm good, mate. Yeah, good weekend. And just watching the good games now. Arsenal looking good. Well, even though Leicester played well as well.
Yeah, your mate Mesut Ozil is doing the business tonight, isn't he?
Yeah, he's looking good, yeah.
He's not wearing that high vis jacket. We know where he is now.
Yeah, he's I'm still a steward's inquiry about the pink boots, so I'm not a big fan of him.
Superb. Jan, how you doing?
Not bad, mate. You alright?
Yeah, all good. All good. £2 a month gets Jan some shaving foam and razor and everything. You're looking a bit rough, mate. You alright?
Yeah, I'm good, mate. This is the rough look tonight.
United usually make you lose your hair, so I take it United doing very well in your opinion.
United have made me go grey over the last year, like 3-4 years. Look, so
But you're always grey.
Sorry?
You're always grey ever since I've known you.
I've always supported United.
leave out. Right, before we do our Premier League review, let's do our quiz. The quiz that we call the quiz that has no name, because it has no name, which means that is the name. Anyway, so for those of you that don't know the rules, and Scott, who's a first-time attendee, the rules are simple. I've picked three games from the past, three results, and all you guys have to do are guess the goal scorers. I'll give you the results first, and then we'll go through the goal scorers at the end of the show. Is that right?
Yep.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. Okay, so this is from season 2005-2006. Manchester United 1, Tottenham Hotspur 1. Okay, got that written down?
Ooh, I think I know the Tottenham scorer. Yeah, okay. Go on.
Next game, Fulham 2, Liverpool 0. Back when Fulham knew how to keep clean sheets.
Fulham 2.
Okay. Mm. And the third game is Arsenal 1, Man City 0. Right. 2005-2006. That was in October. Alright. Okay, we'll go back to that at the end of the show. So let's begin our review. And the only place to start off is, I guess, at Stamford Bridge, where Ross Barkley's injury time equaliser against Man United preserved Maurizio Sarri's unbeaten start to the campaign. I feel a bit of a fool because the other week we were waxing lyrical about Ross Barkley and he came back to bite United. Now, Scott, United last won at Stamford Bridge 6 years ago, so it wouldn't be much of a surprise had Chelsea gone on to win the game when Rudiger gave them the lead. It was a solid first half from Sarri's men, but they looked a bit toothless in the second 45. Were they lucky to escape with a point?
Given the situation, you can argue both ways, can't you? And you argue the fact that credit to Manchester United for the way they came back from that game, 1-0 down. It's always looking ominous when you go a goal behind at Stamford Bridge. Certainly Liverpool showed that a couple of weeks or so ago, but then before Daniel Sturridge bailed them out. But yeah, you know, the most disappointing thing from this result on Saturday was that the football won't be talked about. The result won't be talked about. It was the touchline fracas that will be talked about. And that's a real great shame because it was a great advert for the Premier League. And it was good to see a Manchester United side who have been under a lot of scrutiny from the media, from pundits, really perform, show some character and show that they are still willing to play for their manager.
That's right, absolutely. And Rod, I'm sure most United fans would have taken a point before the game. I sure as hell would have. It feels like a loss now, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's always going to feel a loss when you lose a goal, basically the last kick of the game, and playing so well in the second half. And you know, it's notorious been a difficult ground for United. I remember over the last 20 odd years that I've supported them, I've been to Stamford Bridge. There's not many times I've come away there with 3 points, so it's a difficult place to go. If someone offered me a point before the game, I would have snatched a hand off. So You know, in hindsight, it's a good point, but, you know, when we lost the goal in the 95 minutes, it's always going to be a difficult pill to swallow.
That's right. And Yann, Martial bagged a brace, making it 3 in 2 games for a Frenchman. He denied any rift with Jose Mourinho at full-time, saying, come on, things were not tense between us to begin with. Now, while I don't believe Martial for a second, the fact remains that when he's fully focused on his game, he's absolutely lethal. His application at the weekend was second to none. Are we about to see the real Martial?
No, I hope so, mate. I mean, you know, as United fans, we assess Martial over the years he's been at the club, and we've never doubted his ability. It's just his attitude, maybe his temperament. Has he got what it takes to be a United player and be consistent? I mean, he's had a few games now where he's starting, and maybe the fact now that he's got a bit of consistency, that he's starting, maybe the manager's showing a lot more faith in him. He's starting to produce. He looks a lot happier on the pitch. He actually looks like he's going to do something with the ball now, whenever he gets it. And, you know, credit to him as well. I mean, the second goal was a brilliant goal, but the first goal that he's touched, I mean, it was a cross come shot, and he came at pace. And for him to control it the way that he did and smash in the back of the net was a fantastic finish. And he had a really good game, and I hope he continues his form.
Scott, what do you make of Anthony Martial? Because I've been one of his biggest critics in terms of his application and his attitude. There's a player there, isn't there? But we just don't see it enough. Why do you think that is?
Well, a lot can be pointed at Jose Mourinho for the blame in Martial's development, really. But that could be said for the whole of the Manchester United forward line. You know, Alexis Sanchez, Romelu Lukaku, not really expressed themselves. Marcus Rashford's another prime example. But people seem to forget, because he's been in the Premier League for a couple of years now, but Martial is still only 22 years of age. He's 23 in December, so he's still got another, if he wants, 10, 12 years at the very top. So, you know, I don't think Manchester United fans should write him off just yet. There was a sense when he came to Manchester United, especially in Ligue 1, that he wasn't quite ready for the Premier League. He wasn't doing it week in, week out with Monaco, and Monaco have obviously a history of developing young players and selling them off the following summer. So in one respect, it was no great surprise that he did go from Monaco to Manchester United for that price tag. But was he ready? People probably didn't say he was. So, yeah, I think there is a lot of potential in there. And a couple of goals will definitely give him confidence. It's a case of, we've been here before. He scored a couple of goals in a game before. He scored in games. He knows where the back of the net is. It's just taking it from a good Premier League player to a player that deserves to play week in, week out for Manchester United.
That's right. And you know, let's talk quickly about Eden Hazard, because we spoke about the player when I came on TalkSport a few weeks ago. Mm. You know, you said something about him.
Oh, I remember.
Yeah.
Well,
to be fair, you didn't say anything bad about him. You didn't say he was a bad player. You just said that, you know, he wouldn't be...
He wasn't the best in the Premier League. In terms of, I didn't say he was a bad player. I just endured the wrath of Chelsea fans by saying something bad about one of their players.
Well, he didn't have the best of games, though, did he? He was in Ashley Young's pocket for most of the game, wasn't he?
Yeah. Oh yeah, and this is what my argument was for. You know, you see players at the very top level, week in, week out. Whether they're having a bad game, they still score goals. And it's as I said with Martial, getting from that good level to the very best. And for me, Hazard, although he's been in phenomenal form for Chelsea, you can't argue his form, you can't argue how well he's playing at the minute. It's just that momentum taking it on from this level he is now to the very best. And if he continues to play like this over the course of the season, then I can eat as much humble pie as I want at the end of the season. But for now, that was just my opinion at the time.
That's fair enough, and I think that's a fair opinion to make, to be honest. Rod, I mentioned Ashley Young. He had Salah in his pocket last season at Old Trafford. He now had Hazard in his other pocket. This is a player that effectively is a winger, and he's coming at right back. And to be fair, he hasn't really done much wrong when he's slotted in at full back. I know he's not a defensive-minded player, but he comes in, he does a job, got the Man of the Match award as well. How important is he to United? Because he's out of contract in the summer.
Yeah, he's important. He's obviously, he was a part of Ferguson's side as well, so he knows what it takes to to win a title, and you know, he's done really well at left back, and equally better at right back, because that's his natural side, and he just he was just didn't give Hazard any space. As soon as he got the ball, he was tight, but not too tight. It was very clever what he did, and he was on it all game, and it just nullified him. And I kind of agree what Scott was saying about Eden Hazard. You know, he's top players, when they aren't playing well, they do pop up and do something from the side, and I don't see that in Hazard. So I do kind of agree with Scott with points, kind of his views. But yeah, he's done well. Will he stay on? I would keep him on, because he's a good character to have. He's won the Premier League. He knows what it's about. He can play in various positions. He doesn't let you down. So why would you not keep him on?
Fair enough. And Jan, I remember a few weeks ago we were talking about David Luiz and Rudiger, and I said that Chelsea won't win the title with those two at the back. I know people are going to say to me that, you know, Rudiger scored and Luiz had a hand in the equaliser, but let's be fair, Luiz was atrocious defensively, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was, mate. David Luiz is never a player that strikes you that can hold the defence or he's going to have a solid game. There's always a mistake in David Luiz. He's one of them, you know, footballing centre-back, so to speak. You know, for me, David Luiz is probably best suited to play as a defensive midfielder, where he can control games, mate. He's got a brilliant passing range for a defender. So I think you'd probably be suited playing there. Going back to what you said, no, I don't think Chelsea will win the league with Rudiger and Luiz. There's too many frailties there at the back. There's too many mistakes. And you can even point the second half, how them two didn't really hold Chelsea's defence together, and United grew more in the game. And for me, United should have won the game on Saturday.
I agree, mate.
With that David Luiz one on the second goal, it was just criminal, because you could understand if it was Martial, Lukaku or Rashford, but it's Mata. If you stand your ground, he's not going to go past you. You give your time for your mates to come back, and then they should try and nullify the attack. But him diving in there against Mata was just a joke, and that just proves to me that Chelsea won't be strong enough with him in a back four.
Well, if he's going to do that, Rod, he's got to take Mata out, and he take a yellow card for the team. You know, he doesn't do neither, does he?
Well, he's got to do one or the other. He's got to stab his ground, or he's got to wipe him out. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah.
I personally think he tried to scare Mata. I think he thought that his presence alone would put Mata off, but Mata's too smart for that. He's too smart for that. So, yeah, oh well.
Do you know what, Stel? Just very quickly on Mata, I thought he was outstanding on Saturday. I really did. I thought it was probably one of his best games he's played for a while at United. I thought he was really, really good. And it's no coincidence that he played in kind of that number 10 role where it suits him, and that for me is his best position.
Well, that's Jose rewarding him for that performance against Newcastle, because he came on and he changed the game, didn't he? So
yeah.
But he's really clever when we're defending as well, when we're breaking out, and he doesn't panic, and he picks the right pass. And there's not many players on the side that have that capabilities, and he's really cool under pressure.
I agree. Well, Scott mentioned the touchline bust-up, and Sarri held his hands up and admitted Chelsea were in the wrong about the altercation on the touchline between Mourinho and their technical director or technical assistant, Marco Ianni. Gents, do you think Jose took the bait, or did he know that reacting in such a way would actually deflect more attention off his team? Scott?
I think it's just the heat of the moment. Obviously, you're disappointed, aren't you, to concede such a late goal. As mentioned before, it feels like a defeat, especially when you concede, given the circumstances, given the fact that he was back at his former club as well. Jose Mourinho, more than anyone, would have wanted to win that. But I think Mourinho dealt with it well in his pre-match or his post-match press conference, where he literally said, well, I didn't know who the guy was, which is the perfect way to bite back to him. And I can hold my hands up as well. I had no clue who this guy was. It looked like a fan has come on, put a Chelsea tracksuit on, and ran in front of Jose Mourinho. I mean, there is professionalism, and there is a way to act when you're on the touchline. And you see so many people on the touchline nowadays, members of staff. You know, you see free physios go out and treat people. Surely there should be a time where touchline should be not limited, but sort of monitored more to avoid these incidents, really. Because, yeah, that was just out of hand. I know you can say it's the heat of the moment, so get a draw against Manchester United at home, but it's embarrassing from Chelsea. But knowing Chelsea as a football club and how they've dealt with incidents like this before, they'll do nothing, because they've done nothing for the other incidents. The John Terry incident, they did nothing about it. So I do think Ioane deserves stronger punishment than an FA charge, but they, you know, Chelsea won't act on it, 100%.
Absolutely. Rod, what did you make of that? Because we saw it in the past with Patrice Evra kicking off with a groundsman. That was another random act, wasn't it, back in 2009, I think it was, or 2008? I can't remember.
Yeah, there's a lot of, you know, classless things we could talk about Chelsea, but no, they've seemed to, well, Sarri seems to have deemed with it quite well, that they've kind of put it to bed straight away, which is the correct thing to do. You know, they've apologised, they've all come out and apologised. You know, I listened to Talk Sport today and someone basically saying that Mourinho, he did this on purpose to take it away from his team. It's just absolute nonsense. It's just the heat of the moment. He's literally 30 seconds away from one of the biggest games of his Manchester United career. And he's going to win 2-1 at his old club, Chelsea. And they've just scored and some idiots running in front of him, not once, but twice. And he's just lost the plot. And like Scott said, he didn't know who the guy was. So anyone would react like that. I know I would have. I would have just got. Yeah, I'd have reacted exactly the same. So to say that it was premeditated is just absolute nonsense.
Mm. We see it more frequently these days, don't we? I remember Martin Jo and Arsene Wenger having a go on the touchline. We had Pardew and Wenger. We had Mourinho and Wenger. Actually, Wenger's a troublemaker, isn't he? He's involved with all three of them. Le Professeur. Right, United avoiding defeat at Stamford Bridge wasn't the biggest surprise in the Premier League this weekend. This title belongs to Watford, who scored twice in less than a minute, beating Wolves 2-0 at Molineux. Meanwhile, in Cardiff, Neil Warnock's men capitalised on more atrocious Fulham defending to earn their first league win of the season, 4-2 the scoreline. Cardiff's win moves them out of the bottom three, but defeat for Fulham sees them slip into the danger zone. Joining them are Huddersfield and Newcastle, who both lost at home 1-0 to Liverpool and Brighton respectively. Scott, Liverpool hardly broke a sweat and were rarely troubled by Huddersfield. Their hosts haven't registered a league win in 13 games and have yet to score a goal at home. Now, we've seen many miraculous escapes from relegation over the years, one of them being West Brom's with Kieran Richardson at left back. Incredible. Can Huddersfield dig themselves out of this mess?
Well, there were definitely signs, weren't there, on Saturday afternoon. I must confess, in a pod full of Manchester United fans, probably not my smartest move, but Liverpool is my team. And watching this, it was pretty cagey because I thought Huddersfield did not make them sweat, but they were the better side for most of that game. And obviously, you talked about Hazard earlier. Salah, out of form, people are saying, notched a goal when it mattered to win his side a football match, and that was important for Liverpool. The most impressive thing about Liverpool this season is how they shored up at the back. And I know people will say, well, they spent $75 million on Van Dijk, they spent $63 million on Alisson. But for me, it's this. I see it as, have they improved the areas? Yes, then the money isn't relevant in this argument. They've improved as a team, and that's the end game for a football club. I think Huddersfield, the one thing they are lacking is a goal scorer. The fact that Harry Kane is still the top Premier League goal scorer at the John Smith Stadium with 4 goals in 2 games says it all about Huddersfield's forward line. Yeah. They are... How do I describe them? To sum up, if Huddersfield United were a footballer, it would be Shane Long. Just full of effort, runs in behind, but just doesn't score goals. And that's just Huddersfield's problem.
I've got the name of the show now. Huddersfield are Shane Long. Brilliant.
That's brilliant.
Very good, very good. Rod, I guess the one thing you're guaranteed from a team managed by Colin, being Neil Warnock, and I think listeners will have to work that one out, is 100% commitment. His Cardiff side isn't going down without a fight. Warnock gets a lot of stick for his methods. Is this criticism fair? Have we become snobs?
Probably. Because, you know, he's very black and white. He's very, very simple, very basic. Does all the basics, and you know, you're always going to team spirit. That's what he gains in the teams that he always manages, and that's what he's about. He's a good manager to play for. I'd love to play for someone like, because you know he's passionate, and they're up against it. We know we're up against it. It's going to be very, very difficult. But it was a good win on Saturday. And we'll just have to wait and see. But, you know, it's going to be difficult. Same with Huddersfield. Huddersfield and Cardiff, it's going to be very, very difficult because they're not scoring any goals. You know, if you don't score goals, you're not going to win football matches. So I think it's going to be a struggle for them too. If it was anyone that was going to get out, I'd say Cardiff, but I would say that, you know, that's my club. So, but it's going to be difficult for both of them.
Absolutely. Well, Kojo in the Periscope chat loved your analogy there, Scotty. Yeah, so shout out to Kojo and the three midfield guys and Footy Says. Two fantastic podcasts, and yeah, listen to them on FNX. Right, Jan, Fulham's defending was something you'd expect from a pissed up pub team. Jokanović said his side have so many defensive problems to fix. Now, without sounding too harsh on Fulham, I actually think Jokanović has more issues to resolve than he thinks. What's your take on this?
I think Fulham still think they're in the Championship, but the way that they're playing. And as you know, the
but they were winning games in the Championship.
Yeah, but they were winning games, playing attacking football, and they were a bit like, you know, how Newcastle were back in the day, where we'll attack, score, and then we'll just let in goals as well. That's what Fulham's mentality was in the Championship last year. You can't do that in the Premiership. I mean, when teams like Cardiff are scoring four goals, and no disrespect to Cardiff, but when they're scoring four goals against you, then you've got massive problems. And, you know, Jokanović has been known for playing this good, you know, freestyle football and getting the ball down and pass it. But if they're going to defend how they're defending on Saturday, they might as well go back to the Championship now. That was ridiculous still. You wouldn't see that on a Sunday league, you know, pitches, to be honest. That's basic defending, schoolboy defending, whatever way you want to call it. And he's got to get things right at the back before Fulham start progressing.
It was terrible, terrible defending. The central defender, I forget his name. I think he's American, isn't he? I'm pretty sure he's American. I forget his name.
Tim Ream.
Bloody hell. I don't know what he was drinking the night before, honestly.
I don't know. Maybe he was thinking he was playing American football or ice hockey or something. I don't know, mate. But that was bad. I mean, like I said, you know, especially in the Premiership, you got to defend well. You got to, you know, build your foundation on a solid defence and then, you know, work your way forward. And Fulham are kind of doing the opposite, where they're just leaking goals left, right and centre.
Things, I feel like a broken record because I think this is about the fourth time I've actually mentioned Fulham and their defensive woes. They brought in so many players this summer and people saying, yeah, they had a fantastic transfer window. And on paper, they did, but I think this might have been the fifth or sixth different defensive combination they had. You can't sustain any kind of, you know, you can't sustain your Premier League place if you chop and change all the time. And I still don't think Jokanović knows his best back line. And that's got to be a massive concern because it's not as if he's, you know, Guardiola or Mourinho or Klopp, where he can say, right, I can chop and change a few defenders, but at least I know that they're going to put in a shift. It's almost as if he's picked these guys from the street and said, right, do you want to come and play for us? That's how it sounds like.
Mm. No, I agree, mate. I mean, you know, I don't want to go back on United, but even with United, how many defensive partnerships do they chop and change every week? And then you see the results. They're another team that lead goals left, right and centre. And Fulham, you know, no disrespect, but they're a lesser side than United with lesser quality. So if they're going to keep chopping and changing at the back, they're not going to get a rhythm. They're not going to get consistency. And like I said, you build from the back, and you know, once you get a solid defence, then you can start progressing towards the team. And you know, I don't know if this is true or not, but apparently Jokanović is under pressure to lose his job. So early in the season as well, after everything that he did for them last season, and it would be a shame if this kind of bad start leads to him to losing his job. Because I quite like the way he plays or implements his style to his team. So he just needs a little bit more time maybe to get used to the Premiership.
Well, Saturday's result means Fulham have actually failed to keep a clean sheet in their last 23 Premier League away games. I know they haven't been in the Prem for a while, but 23 away games in the Premier League without a clean sheet, yeah, that's got to change.
It's got 100%. Like I said, at this level, it's ruthless. And, you know, when teams like Cardiff, again, like I said, score four goals against you, then alarm bells are ringing.
Absolutely. Scott, Watford's coupon-busting win at Wolves ended two records, their winless run and Wolves' unbeaten start to the season. A big result for Watford, given they were without Cabasele, Holebas and Deeney. What impressed you most about their win?
Well, the fact that they go to Wolves and pick up the 3 points... you know, it's testament to themselves. You know, when they had that run of defeats, you know, they lost to Manchester United, held by Fulham, lost to Arsenal, hammered by Bournemouth. People are thinking, well, after that fantastic start, they're just going to slip back down to mid-table mediocrity. But they showed that, you know, they might have something going this season for them. I'm not saying they're finishing their top six. You know, they might finish, you know, in the top 10, which might be a huge achievement for Watford. But yeah, it was a great result for them and for Wolves as well. It was a bit of a reality check. I'm not saying there was a bit of complacency coming from that Wolves side, but they fielded the same Premier League side for 8 games in a row. Everyone knew their roles in that Wolves side and they were well prepared for the Premier League season. And, you know, there were times where they are going to lose games. It's natural. They're not going to be the Invincibles from 03-04. They are going to lose games. So it'll be interesting to see how Wolves bounce back from this, because a lot of people, when they came in, said they'd be top six. So, yeah, it's going to be a very interesting to see how Wolves react from this.
That's right. And, you know, conceding 2 goals in such a short space of time, such a hammer blow, isn't it? Because at 1-0, you can think, yeah, you know, they've got plenty of time to get back into it. But to concede straight away, I don't know whether that's just defensive naivety, maybe they switched off, or maybe it's just coming to the point now where they've actually realised that they're in the Premier League now. You can't afford to be giving away soft goals.
Yeah, and that's the lesson when you come to the Premier League. When you go to the Championship, I know the standard of the Championship's becoming increasingly better, but, you know, you can get away with a little bit of stuff. But, yeah, you know, Wolves, it'll be interesting to see how they recover from here. But I'm just trying to take credit to Watford for how they performed. As you mentioned, those two quick goals, Pereira, I think he's been fantastic this season. Kapoue's always been a danger for them. Decore, I thought, had a fantastic game in midfield. And you know, you look at that lineup they played on Saturday. Obviously, Deeney didn't start. You had Isaac Success, Gerard Delafeu, Pereira, Will Hughes, Kapoue, Decore. Now, these aren't household names. These are just regular Premier League mid-table names. But Javi Gracia, for the first time in a while, seems to be a Wolves manager, which is building something at the club and not getting sacked at the end of the season and being replaced by someone else from Spain. So it seems to be that Watford fans are starting to reap the rewards, and the board is starting to reap the rewards for staying patient with Gracia.
That's right, because they basically plucked him out of the unknown, didn't they? Not many people knew about him, so he's done a fantastic job so far, I believe.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And the best part of that win on Saturday is that he was able to give the opportunities to the younger guys. You know, Ben Wilmot signed from Stevenage in the summer. So he was playing in the Football League last season in League Two. He's now playing in the Premier League. And it's just experience for the future on building with that. And as you mentioned, they're missing a few key players. So to go up to Wolves, keep a clean sheet, come away with a 2-0 win, you couldn't have asked for a better result for Watford.
Absolutely. And Rod, 2 points out of a possible 27 is relegation form. Newcastle are in a heap of trouble, aren't they?
Yeah. It's going back to the same thing with Huddersfield and Cardiff. If you're not scoring goals, you're going to struggle. And, you know, if they don't bring someone in January, they're definitely going to be, along with Huddersfield and Cardiff, definitely relegated, because they're just struggling. The games on Saturday at Brighton at home, they're the games that you should be winning. You definitely shouldn't be losing. And it's, you know, if they don't get a striker in January, they're going to really struggle.
Yeah, they got rid of Gale. He's gone out on loan to West Brom, and they brought in Rondon, and he's not going to do much. Hosselu, I don't know how many goals he's scored since joining Newcastle. And to be honest, Scott, you're going to probably find this funny, but here are three United fans that genuinely feel sorry for Rafa Benitez. You know, he's a fantastic coach. He's worked wonders at Newcastle to keep them in the Premier League, let alone, you know, try get somewhere. They got in 10th place last season, didn't he? So it was a remarkable achievement. Do you think he'll leave if an offer comes in before January, even during January?
It'd definitely be tempting, but there's a few million reasons why I don't think he would leave in the summer, put it that way. I think Rafa Benitez, obviously Newcastle squad is a Championship squad, and the fact that he kept him up last season was miraculous in itself. But although I know Rafa Benitez, you know, is a hero in Liverpool fans' eyes, I can't help but think that there is part of this to blame on Rafa Benitez. then the senses for Newcastle fans, there's so much hatred towards Mike Ashley that Rafa Benitez is kind of getting a free ride, especially if they perform badly, then it's Mike Ashley's fault for not bringing in players. Well, the transfer window's closed, so even if Mike Ashley wanted to bring in players, he can't at the moment. So, you know, you've got to focus on what you've got. Was it Mike Ashley's decision to have a bust-up with Alexander Mitrovic? No, it was Rafa Benitez's. So, you know, there are question marks towards Benitez, and, you know, was it Mike Ashley's fault that he played defensive football at home to Chelsea? I would argue not. So there's a lot for Benitez to answer for, and I think because of this, the hatred towards Mike Ashley and so much the fans want him to leave the football club, that Newcastle fans are kind of giving Benitez a free ride for their bad performances, when if it was at any other club, the pressure would be huge on Benitez at the minute.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, remember when we went to Chelsea, you know, they won the Europa League, and even that wasn't enough for them. You know, obviously there was the Liverpool connection, which they weren't too happy about. But at the same time, they had a head coach there an interim head coach that did the business. And, you know, as I said before, he's a fantastic coach. And I agree with you. He's kind of hiding behind the rivalry between the fans and Mike Ashley. So, yeah, let's see how that one pans out.
Yeah, exactly. And the concerning thing for not just Newcastle, for the Premier League, is Newcastle look absolutely woeful this season. Huddersfield can't score a goal, as described by my TalkSport colleague Jason Candy as Cruddersfield. you have Cardiff as well. Fulham, you know, if they don't get their act together, they're heading towards that danger zone. And Southampton as well have been bang average for two seasons now.
Yeah.
I don't know how Mark Hughes got a permanent job at the end of last season. Yes, he kept them up, but if you look at his record since then, it's been abysmal. So there's, you know, concern for the Premier League that there's five teams there that I've just named who wouldn't look out of place in the Championship, let alone the Premier League.
Joe, you mentioned Mark Hughes. I think every week we need to have a separate segment on the show to have Rodri's views on Mark Hughes. I think the last time he said, I'm too tired about talking about Mark Hughes, I do it too much. You love him, don't you, Rod?
Yeah, he's boring. He's like a broken record.
I saw a stat earlier this season that he had a bigger whinge rate than he did a win rate in charge of Southampton. Out of his 13 games, he whinged for almost half of them, which was quite impressive, actually.
it's always someone else's fault.
Do you think he's talking to Fabregas now? Because they fell out a while back, didn't they? I don't know. Right, in other news, Cristiano Ronaldo hit the headlines for the right reasons after becoming the first player to score 400 goals in Europe's top five leagues. Unfortunately, it wasn't to be Juve's day as they were held at home by Genoa. Meanwhile, in Milan, Mario Icardi was Inter's hero again with a 92nd-minute win against deadly rivals AC Milan. The Argentinian became the second player to score five goals in a row for his team in the Derby della Madonnina. Now, Jan, I know you're a big Serie A fan. It wasn't a great advert for Serie A, but the Inter fans won't care at all. What on earth was Donnarumma thinking, though? What a time to have a brain lapse.
Oh, mate, when you want to talk about lapse of concentration or, you know, to do that in a game of that magnitude, in the 93rd minute, I mean, and to be fair, Donnarumma's not really Milan's biggest kind of... the fans haven't really taken to him, to be honest, since the contract kind of, you know, scandal last year where he was, you know, he wanted to leave or he wanted to stay, wanted more money. The Milan fans haven't really taken to him. And to make a mistake like that against your biggest, you know, your biggest rivals, it's not going to go, you know, too down. It's not going to go well with the Milan fans, to be honest. And yeah, like you said, the game wasn't great. You know, you expect that really in a derby. You know, in Italy, it's more tactical, it's more technical. So you don't really, you know, with these games, you don't really get great games most of the time. But like you said, Inter won 1-0, and you know, if you're an Inter fan, who cares? Icardi gets the winner, and they go home happy.
Scott, what's your take on Donnarumma? Because it seems that he's been given this title as the heir to Buffon's throne, but he's more like a pauper, isn't he?
Well, yeah, he hasn't certainly lived up to that tag that he was given. And he went through that trouble with the Milan fans, didn't he? Where they didn't really take to him. And I think they even brought in his brother, who played in a couple of Coppa Italia games last season, just to keep him happy.
Yep,
right. And actually performed quite well, considering he came from the unknown in Italian football. So, you know, they've brought in Pepe Reina as well, so it's not like they're light on goalkeeping reinforcement if he was to leave. But if I was Milan or if I was Juventus, you know, Szczesny's performing well there at the minute, don't get me wrong, but, you know, I'd look at someone like Matai Perin at Genoa, who, you know, is a young keeper, performed there for a few years consistently in Serie A and probably deserves the next step to a big club in Italy, rather than Donnarumma, who has shown in his young career, he's a fantastic goalkeeper, but does he have baggage, and do you want that unnecessary baggage at your football club? Especially when you want to win the Champions League, you want the attention being on the pitch. Now, I know that's ironic to say with the Ronaldo case going on off the pitch, but I just think Donnarumma just lacks a bit of maturity at the minute. And that's perfectly natural given his age, but I'd think Juventus would go for someone more like Matteo Perin.
Perin's at Juventus, isn't he?
Well, wasn't it Genoa last season?
Yeah, he's Chesney's number two.
Back up to Szczesny. Then
yeah, he's at Juve.
Well, that's answered my question already. I look into a crystal ball and see these things.
Well, you need to tell me your lottery numbers then, because Well, yeah, I know you mentioned
about that after the show.
Well, do I have the same taste as Juventus' scouts? That's quite concerning for Juventus more than me, to be honest. But.
Oh, maybe they're scouting you, mate. Well, I know you mentioned Donnarumma's contract from last summer. It was Raiola that actually came out and said, you know, he's not going to sign a new contract. And that was when Italian football fans, in fact, it was a national team game where the Italian fans were throwing fake money at him. I don't know if you guys remember that.
They made him cry on the pitch.
Yeah, they made him cry on the pitch, yeah.
That's right.
Well, listen, I'm not trying to be funny, but the Italian football fans are the last fans I'd want to piss off. You know, especially if they're from Naples. Christ. I'm going to that.
Especially the Milan fans as well. You know, I know it's not AC Milan, but Inter Milan had all that business with Icardi, where the ultras went around his house and threatened him, and then Icardi made it worse by saying, "Well, I can just get the ultras back in Argentina to come on." And you know, that was messy.
We covered
but,
that.
You know, it was good for Icardi to actually score that goal and. It just shows if you score a goal in a Milan derby, given the time it was as well, then they may start to forget that and see him more as a hero now. It'd be interesting to see how it
goes. I think they've forgiven him though, Scott, the Inter fans, Icardi. They've taken to Icardi. Mm. I think it's the fact that because he scores goals and does the business on the pitch.
He scored 30 goals last season.
Yeah, he does the pitch. Icardi is a proper striker, he's a proper goal scorer. I'd have him at United all day, Icardi. I really would.
Well, see, this is the thing. We were talking about Icardi last season, as Scott alluded to, with the threats, or saying that he'll get some gangsters or get some people to, you know, and then also the being, well, I would say, dropped from the Argentinian national team. We were saying, you know, is it because he's mates with, what's it called? He fell out with Maxi Lopez, didn't he? And Maxi Lopez is mates with Messi. So it could have been that. And this is a player who, let's be honest, he's kind of like in Higuain's shadow. And where was Higuain at the weekend? He was absolutely nowhere. And again, he is another a Cyril Bottler. Cyril Bottler. But anyway, that's another story for another time, I guess. Right, this season's first El Clasico will be without Ronaldo and Messi for the first time since forever, it would seem. Leo Messi fractured his arm in Barca's 4-2 win over Sevilla, ruling him out for 3 weeks. Real Madrid, however, suffered their fourth loss in 5 games after going down 2-1 at home to Levante. Scott, does the absence of Ronaldo and now Messi remove some of the glamour to the derby? I can't remember the last time this fixture didn't contain any of the world's elite players.
Yeah, that's a good question. I would say definitely if you take those two out, it would remove the glamour. But I think at the minute, both teams have had up and down seasons so far. It's not a high quality Clásico as I've seen in recent years. Both sides at the pomp of their, you know, with the momentum, the form they're bringing into the clash. I think both sides are struggling. Real Madrid went through that ridiculous goal drought, broke the record for the most amount of minutes without scoring a goal, considering, you know, the club Real Madrid are, it's quite embarrassing. But at the same time, Lopetegui has himself to blame, because he's not been playing Bale, he's not been playing Benzema. You know, he's been playing Mariano, who who was a good striker in Ligue 1 last season, but there's a step from playing for Lyon in Ligue 1 to playing for Real Madrid at the Bernabeu in La Liga. Now, Mariano, of course, formerly was at Real Madrid, but, you know, he's not going to expect it to hit the ground running straight away after coming back, taking that number 7 jersey as well. Now, Barcelona, although they got the job done, Messi stole the headlines for his work and for his injury. I think the man of the match in that game was Marc-Andre Ter Stegen, without a shadow of a doubt. He kept them in that game as well. So, you know, it's going to be... I'm interested to see the best of a bad bunch, actually, this season in this season's Clásico, rather than, oh, will Messi have a moment of magic? Will Ronaldo light it up? Obviously, Ronaldo's not there anymore. Messi's injured. So it will really show who wants to stand up and be counted for in these big games. Now, Gareth Bale is a player that has previous with that, so it'd be interesting to see whether he does that. But, yeah, I'm really looking forward to this in a weird way because, as I say, both sides have started the season indifferently. So, yeah, bring it on.
Mm. Does anyone like to guess, or would anyone like to guess when the last El Clásico was without Messi and Ronaldo?
I want to say 2008, 2009 or something. Probably that season, or maybe if not
2007.
Very good, 2007. Ronaldo hadn't joined Real Madrid yet, and Messi. Yeah. And here's another bit of trivia, interesting one. Barcelona have never won an El Clásico when Messi hasn't played.
The Wolf Saha of Barcelona.
But we know that Barcelona are going to beat Real Madrid, and Real Madrid's manager is going to get the sack, isn't he? Which leads me on to you, Rod. Real's technical director, Emilio Butragueño, gave Lopetegui the dreaded vote of confidence before the game. Now, I can't help but think that a loss to Barca will be the nail in his coffin. It isn't looking good for the former Spain national team head coach, is it?
No, it's not, and they're not a very patient club, are they? So it's you know, if they get a good result, it'll probably last another month. But in my opinion, he's a dead man walking, and I don't think he'll last till Christmas. I just think they've lost too many games at home that would never ever lose in the past. So I think, like I say, he's a dead man walking, and it's just a matter of time before they get someone else in.
Fair enough.
Giza's been ruined in 2 months, though.
What's that?
The Giza's been ruined in 2 months. He lost the job the day before the World Cup with Spain, and he's gone to Real Madrid. It's had two disastrous months. I mean, his reputation as a manager has been shattered in 2 months.
Yeah, but don't forget, it was his choice to take the Real Madrid job. He could have waited until after the World Cup to take it. Announcing that effectively destroyed him. Because
yeah, but was it him announcing it?
No, it wasn't the Spanish FA, because it was the Spanish FA's president that went to Russia to talk to him and to iron things out. It wasn't him that announced it.
No, that's what I mean. He wanted probably to keep it quiet until after the World Cup, so he wouldn't have wanted to put his job in jeopardy by announcing it. So unless Real Madrid maybe forced him to announce it, or it was them, or I don't know, even that was a weird one, but I think the problem with Real Madrid, they haven't invested well since Ronaldo's gone. You know, where's the marquee signings this year? You know, I know
they've still got some good players, though. They shouldn't be getting beat off Levante and teams like that at home.
No, they shouldn't. But when you lose 40, 50, 60 goals a season, when they have done in Ronaldo, I mean, yeah. Benzema scored 9 last season. So, you know.
Yeah, but these big players have to step up, then, don't they? They have to get out of Ronaldo's shadow and start stepping up.
Yeah, I agree.
They've got the talent to do that.
Yeah, but what I'm saying, Rod, if you're going to lose 60 goals out of Ronaldo, Benzema didn't score hardly last season, and you're not going to replace Ronaldo, then you're going to have problems. I'm not surprised that they're in the situation. I'm not. Yeah, they've got class players, but
they've got Courtois.
Yeah, I think the less said about that, the better.
I mean, there was another bus stop with Ramos and one of the other players today, wasn't there? You know, they had to come out and apologise, Ramos.
Mate, that happens every week in training grounds. That happens every week.
No, I agree. By the fact that now that Real Madrid are not playing well, and there's pressure, and that happens, it's just adding.
Isn't it surprising that this story's coming out now? Real Madrid comes out. It wasn't coming out last year when they were Champions League when it happened. Happens every couple of weeks. That
absolutely.
There you go. Right, gents. Before we wrap up the show, shall we do the results game or the quiz that has no name or whatever it's called?
Oh yeah.
I'm just going to remind you of the season and the results. 2005-2006, Man United 1, Spurs 1, Fulham 2, Liverpool 0, Arsenal 1, Man City 0. Jan, do you want to guess?
For United, I'm going to go Van Nistelrooy. For Tottenham, I'm going to go, I think it was Jermaine Genas that scored the free kick. I think it was that.
You going with that?
Yeah, that's what I'm going for.
Oh, okay. Scott?
Yeah, I would go with, I'd back that as well. The Jermaine Genas free kick, I definitely remember that one. But 2005-06, I was barely double digits then, so my footballing memory was it's quite hard. What result do you want me to guess here out of the three? All of them.
Yeah, just guess the goal scorers.
I remember Liverpool losing against Fulham, so... Was it 2-1 or 2-0?
It was 2-0 to Fulham. Do you know the goal scorers?
2-0. I know one of them. Wait, was Steve... No. Boa Morte, did he score? Steve Malbronk, did he get the other?
Okay. You're going with Malbronk and... I'm going to write his name. Malbronk and Boa Morte. Okay.
Lewis Boa Morte.
Okay. And what about
the only two Fulham players I remember from that time.
And what about the Spurs-United game? Do you want to guess
Spurs
the goal scorers?
Spurs-United. I agreed with the Jermaine Genas.
Yep.
I wouldn't have a clue who scored for Manchester United back in that day.
Okay.
Who played for Manchester United back in 2005?
Van Nistelrooy, Ronaldo, Rooney, Scholes, Giggs. Yeah. Who else? Rio Ferdinand, Vidic.
Silvestre, Evra.
Silvestre. Oh, what a blast in the past. Mikel Silvestre.
Okay, you're going with Mickey, okay. Rod?
I'm going to go United score. Tottenham score, I'm going to go Berbatov.
Okay.
United, I'm going to go... is Teddy Sheringham still there? He wouldn't have been there, would he?
No, he's gone by then. I think it was a West Ham or Fulham at that. A Portsmouth at that time, wasn't he?
We're gonna go Diego Forlan. Diego Forlan.
Okay, interesting. Okay, Fulham 2, Liverpool 0. We've got your Scott Jan.
I'm gonna go Boa Morte. I'm gonna go Clint Dempsey. Sorry.
Okay, Dempsey. Okay, he used to be. Did a bit of rapping, didn't he?
I'm gonna go Dempsey and Zamora.
Dempsey. Okay. Some more. Lovely. Right. Arsenal 1, Man City 0. Rod?
Was that the Emirates 2005?
Yeah. Well, I'm not going to answer that question. You've got to guess. I'm not going to give you any hints.
When did Arsenal move into the stadium
2000?
I'm going to go Robert Pires.
Oh, that's a top shout.
Okay. Jan?
2005. Cesc Fabregas.
Oh, young.
Right, Scott.
Well, I was going to go with my blast from the past, Jeremy Alley-Alier, but I'm not.
It could be Henry as well.
Yeah, to be. Yeah, I was thinking Henry or someone of that ilk.
I think it was Fabregas, actually. Is that when they missed the penalty and then he scored afterwards? I think it was Fabregas, actually.
Oh, he's backing himself. This is brave. Go on. Yeah, I would say Thierry Henry, then. Why not? Okay. Club legend, all that.
All right, okay. Let me get my...
Do you know what, Scott? I'm gonna look really silly if you want Fabregas now,
won't it? 100%.
Yeah.
Right, okay, so the first result, Man United 1, Spurs 1. The goal scorers for Man United were Mikel Silvestre. Spurs' goal scorer was Jermaine Genus. Now, I remember that game because A, I was there, and B, I actually put a fiver on Sylvester to score first goal at 33-1. So I was quite happy about that. There you go. The second game, Fulham 2, Liverpool 0. Goal scorers were Collins John and Luis Boamorte.
Collins John.
So, so far...
Was he related to Stern John, by any chance?
Nah.
Was that just...
Collins John was Dutch, and Stern John
was from Trinidad.
Yeah, that's right. So far, Jan's got one. You got the Jermaine Genus one, so did Scott. Rod only got Forlan Berbatov, which is way off. Who got Boamorte? Scott, you got Boamorte. Jan got Boamorte. Oh, no. Rod got Boamorte.
No, Zamora Dempsey. I never got it.
There you go. Okay, fair enough. Now, the final one. Arsenal 1, Man City 0. It was Robert Pires that got the winner. Robert Pires. Yes. And do you know what was significant about this game? Anyone want to guess?
Is it the first game at the Emirates? Or?
No. Anyone else want to guess?
It was the last game at Highbury.
No. Jan, do you want to guess?
Did Fabregas miss the penalty?
No, it was that famous penalty that Pires and Henry took.
With Danny Mills scored up to Pires.
They tried to do the Johan Cruyff penalty and they completely ballsed it up, which was hilarious. So yeah, in their red current kit. So yeah, this was a very good game this week because there have been times where our guests have got zero. And Scott, you've done very well.
Oh.
Rod did well. Jan, you know, you tried to play cute with the Fabregas one. But hey, anyway.
Take it.
The one that was definitely 2005.
Yeah.
That one that said.
Yeah, definitely.
He did get it right with the penalty, though.
Yeah,
there we go. I'm backing him up here.
Stop backing him up. You won't be coming back on, Scott. Your job here is to embarrass Jan, not be on his side. Stop it.
Okay. I didn't get the memo. Sorry.
Great stuff. Well, Scott, thank you ever so much for joining us, mate. I really hope you can come back on another time. It'd be great to have you back on the show.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Anytime.
Great stuff. Before we let you go, would you like to give our listeners your Twitter handle?
Yeah, why not? At Scott Taylor UK. My name's Scott Taylor and I live in the UK.
Fantastic. Jan, Twitter handle?
Yannick is J.
Rod?
At Rod James Giggs.
Fan bloody tastic. We're on Twitter at Shoot the Defence. We have a Facebook group page. Please feel free to join that. And also, please listen out to other fantastic podcasts on FNX. You have the Playmakers podcast, you have Three Midfield, DD Footy Factory, who else have we got? One Up Front podcast, loads of podcasts. Join up. And also, please follow at PitchDMM, one of our sponsors for tonight's show. So until next time, guys, take care.